Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Guberti, and this is the podcast for entrepreneurs who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. Do you want more incoming clients but hate marketing and selling yourself? The solution is to build relationships as you expand your powerful personal network. The difference between people who have spread their message and others who haven't gotten their message out of the bottle is the strength of their networks. In this episode, we'll discuss how you could expand on yours. Today's guest shows entrepreneurs and small business owners how to bring in more income and clients by building real human relationships with influencers, VIPs, and people who matter. He attributes his powerful personal network to much of his success and runs the Smart Business Revolution as well as Rise 25. Today's guest for episode 110 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than John Corcoran. John, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, I'm honored and privileged. Thanks for having me.
John, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show. And I really look forward to diving into building our networks, but I'd love to get some backstory first. So when did you realize the importance of having a powerful personal network?
Oh, man. Well, you know, when I was a kid, I had multiple occasions where my father got laid off. And each time he got laid off, it meant we had to move to another city because, there were only a limited number of jobs that he could do. And so we had to kind of move around the country. And I remember as a kid, when he was out of work, and I was very frustrated. And at the time, we had to slash all our expenses. We weren't homeless or anything like that, but we, you know, definitely had to cut back pretty dramatically as a family. And I remember just thinking like, oh man, I wish my dad could just get a job, but it wasn't that easy. It wasn't that simple. And, you know, so when I was a teenager, I really, I dove into biographies and autobiographies for all kinds of different industries. And what I found was that universally across the board, really what people did is they, you know, the people who are really successful build a lot of really high level relationships in their industry. And so I applied that to my life and, you know, have had some amazing opportunities, having had the opportunity to work in the White House and be a speechwriter to Governor California. And I was an early employee of DreamWorks and, you know, run my own business for a number of years now and all of it on the strength of relationships. So that's really how I originally discovered the importance of building strong relationships.
And with those relationships, you've been able to land some of those really incredible jobs at a young age and now teach others how they can build up their own networks. And I feel like when people look at, let's say, some billionaire entrepreneur or someone like that, where they have like, it seems like they got everything working for them. They have all the connections. They have such a big network. But I feel like people, they think less about that person had to put in all the work to have the network and more of this person already has the network. But in reality, they had to start with nothing. So how can we make connections and build our networks from the ground and scale it up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's easy to look at like an Oprah Winfrey or a Mark Cuban or someone like that and be like, oh man, they've got such great connections. But look, they got there because they scraped and they worked hard and most people like that were not born with a bunch of great connections. And a lot of those people who are born into influence, they just squander the lead that they had in life, you know, like a football team that finds itself on the 5-yard line and can't punch it into the end zone. You know, there's a lot, you see a lot that really frequently. So how can we get past that? How can we build relationships? The truth is, like, no matter what level we're at, we're constantly striving to get to the next level. You know, you could be running a business that does $100 million and you're trying to connect with people who are running $200 million businesses, right? I mean, there's always some next level that we're trying to get to. And what I like to say is I think you got to distill it down to being much more human. The people who are not successful in seeking to build relationships with, whether it's an influencer or a VIP or some critical potential client in your industry or something like that, the ones who are not successful are the ones who are focused on themselves, who are just thinking about what can I get out of this relationship. Conversely, if you stop that and you turn it around and you think, okay, what can I do to deliver value to this person, even if it's outside of my vocation, even if it's just providing them with a restaurant recommendation, even if it's just telling them the direction of where the bathroom is or grabbing them a drink at the, you know, at the bar that you're at some networking event or something like that. thinking about how can you deliver value to that person is really where it fundamentally starts. And from there, you can develop a human relationship.
And it's interesting how you point out again how these people, they don't really start with big networks and they expand them over time by putting in all of that work to meet new people, develop their networks. But when I think about the network, and one of the things I feel like most people aren't doing enough of, I feel like we're great at reaching out to new people. We're great at the outreach, but I feel like we have to get better at nurturing the relationships we've built. So what are your suggestions on nurturing relationships and still outreaching in the process?
Sure. So, you know, nurturing is around the most important thing is to be consistent and to not just treat a relationship like it's a one-shot deal. You know, there's a lot of people who will make an attempt to connect with someone and it's kind of one and done. Like they'll try once and they'll never try again, or they'll give up too easily. I'm thinking of, like, you know, there's an author, his name's Dan Pink. He's written a number of great books that I'm a big fan of, like Drive and To Sell Is Human. And I just emailed him the other day because he's got a new book coming out. Now, look, when an author has a new book coming out, what do they want? They want exposure. Promotion. They want exposure, right? It doesn't matter how many books they've sold before. They need to sell more of the book that's coming out. And I, you know, first emailed Dan probably about 5 years ago. And I haven't emailed him in a while. It's been over a year. But, you know, here I come again, right? I mean, I'm being consistent. I've interviewed him before on my podcast. I've come out to one of his book signing. You know, I've followed up with him over time. And that shows real consistency. And that really builds trust. So, you know, delivering value over time is how you nurture a relationship with someone. You don't need to worry about it all being accomplished overnight. In fact, a lot of people who are more introverted, a big objection that I hear from them is, you know, well, I don't like going to networking events and I see other people who are really extroverted and how can I possibly compete with that? Well, the truth is a lot of times the people who are really extroverted are actually really bad at building a network because they don't follow up. You know, they might be really great in person. They might have a big personality in a room, but then they are not consistent. They're not nurturing that relationship over time. And so oftentimes people who are more introverted end up being a lot more successful in life because they turn that energy into, okay, I'm going to be good at nurturing that relationship and building it over time. So that is really what I think is going to help you in the long run, help you to build better relationships and to thrive, have your business thrive and your career thrive.
And I love how you mentioned the networking events and the difference between introverts and extroverts. I classify myself as an introvert. I have a lot of the I'm pretty much introverts, but I still host the Breakthrough Success podcast. And I feel like for introverts, like, that should not be an excuse for not going mm-hmm. to networking events. I don't think that at all, but how can we get better at approaching people and starting those relationships? I feel like we're great at nurturing relationships once we have yeah. them, but how can we start them at a networking event setting?
Yeah, you know, the other thing I want to say, so yeah, I'm happy to answer that about how to approach people in a networking event, but I also want to say, you know, you should really design, and I think you're doing this, you should really design your life around who you are. You know, I mean, if you don't like loud, boisterous party atmosphere types of environments, then don't put yourself in that kind of environment. You know, if you don't like talking to people, then don't start a podcast. If you don't like like appearing on video, then don't try and be a YouTuber. If you don't like writing, then don't try and be a blogger. You know, so play to your own strengths. You know, look at what do you enjoy doing. And actually, I mean, I've been a guest on lots of podcasts that are run by introverts because, you know, running a podcast, if you're an introvert, is not that threatening. I don't consider myself an introvert, but I have introverted tendencies. You can't go to law school like I did without having some introvert in you, right? So, because you spend a lot of time alone with a book. But, when you're doing a podcast, you're just talking to one person, you know, it's just one conversation with one person and oftentimes not even over video or anything. You're just having a phone conversation over the phone. So oftentimes, you know, that's totally fine for an introvert. So, but to answer your question about how to go about approaching people at a networking event, I think the first thing you want to ask yourself is not, you know, what's that one thing I say or what's that one thing I do in order to get the attention of someone at a networking event. The first question you want to ask yourself is much further back, actually. And what I mean by that is you want to ask yourself, am I even in the right place? Because if you have a feeling of discomfort, which happens a lot of times at networking events where people feel like, oh man, I dread this. I don't enjoy this. I'd rather be home. I don't want to be doing this. Oftentimes that originates because you're at the wrong type of event to begin with. So you have to really ask yourself, what are my larger goals in my career or in my business? And am I even putting myself in the right environment? For example, I mean, I would rather get on a plane and fly once a year to a conference where I know I'm going to be immersed with exactly the right type of people that I want to connect with than be going like, you know, once a month to some local chamber of commerce meeting or something like that, where it's really not the right group of people. I'm going to feel uncomfortable. I'm going to wish I was home with my family. And, you know, I'd just rather not be doing it. So that's really the most important first step, is making sure that you're going to the right types of events, and the right events that you're going to are really aligned with the goals that you have for your career or for your business. And if you do those things right, then all the other pieces will fall into line a lot more easily, because you will be immersed amongst a group of people that you really want to be with. And it's going to be a lot more natural for you to have those types of conversations.
This is another example of quality versus quantity. And I feel like people appreciate that difference in like many areas. But for networking, I feel like some people are tempted to think, well, the more people I know, the more events I go to, the better. But it's better to go to those few events that are going to give you the best environment versus going to a lot of events that may not create that same environment for you. And then the pieces do come together. And for some people, those pieces are making relationships and getting clients, so, and getting customers. So how are we able to build relationships to a point where some of the people do become clients and customers?
Sure. So I want to address that, but even before I get to that, I love the point about quality versus quantity. Another way that I like to phrase that is, you know, when you go to a traditional networking event or even a conference or something like that, oftentimes it feels like you're searching for a needle in a haystack, right? You're looking for that one person out of 100 who's just a perfect fit for you, perfect fit for your business, or perfect fit for, you know, you just click with them or something like that. And oftentimes it's not the needle in a haystack that you should be looking for, because you're going to the wrong type of event. What you want to be looking for is you want to be finding the pile of needles. In other words, you want to find the place where it's not one person out of 100 is the right fit for you. You want to go to a place where 90 or 95 people out of 100 is the right fit for you. And that's why I gave the example of sometimes that means you need to get yourself on a plane, you need to go to a conference once a year, and that's going to be a lot more concentrated, a lot more effective than going every month or every week, you know, or whatever, to some local event, which isn't exactly a good fit for your business or career goals. But as far as what you asked, you know, how do you take these relationships and then turn them into actual business relationship? I'm really glad you said that, because so often people give up on that last piece. Maybe it's out of a fear of failure or fear of rejection. But you do need to, that's a really critical piece, because otherwise, you know, all we're talking about here is just, we're talking about connecting with people who we look up to or who we admire. And I don't really care about that. You know, if you just want to go meet Justin Bieber and just go buy a ticket to one of his concerts, you know, if you're just trying to meet famous people or people you admire and not turn it into, you know, not have any larger business goals, that's of less interest to me. But if you do want to connect with influencers and VIPs and you want to use it to support your business goals or your career goals, then what I advocate people to do is to have something which I call a minimum viable offering, or MVO. And now what that is what I need to explain is that so often when people are in business, especially if they're a professional service provider, they're selling something that's relatively expensive. And I call that the big bag of money problem, because you're asking people to part with a big bag of money in order for you to serve them. And that's hard because they've never bought anything from you before. A lot more effective model is to sell them something that's a lot less expensive, that allows them to experience you, allows that person to get a good result from you, and then they built up more trust, and then they're more willing to part with more money and go deeper with you. And every really successful large business does this. Everything from Starbucks to Disney to professional sports teams, they all have different offers. That, you know, Starbucks doesn't immediately sell you a $3,000 espresso machine. No one goes into a Starbucks and immediately buys that. But they buy a $2 cup of coffee, they buy a $5 latte, the next time they come in, they buy a sandwich, they work their way up the ladder. And so what more business owners should do is have something like that. I call it an MVO, minimum viable offer, that allows them to accelerate. And, you know, we can think of a lot of different examples, but take, for example, if you're a photographer and you're trying to sell like a $20,000 wedding package, well, maybe what you do is instead of selling that, you're going to sell like a $500 engagement package. It's a lot less expensive. It's a lot more discreet. It gets them a good result. They get to experience you. They get to see, oh, wow, she did such a great job. We should really hire her. We should really plunk down all this extra money and have her be our wedding photographer. And so it's a lot more effective strategy. It gets people into the door and it gets them working with you. So that's a great way to take those relationships you're developing and then convert them into more of a business relationship.
I really like that idea of just opening the conversation with not the most expensive product you have, maybe not even the least expensive product you have, but something in that sweet spot where people will be able to buy it and they'll be able to get an idea of what you do. The price point obviously depends on the event you're going to, because some people can spend thousands of dollars on a whim. Others won't even want to spend $100. So it definitely depends on the people who are at the event. But I'd like to backtrack a little bit, because we were talking about introvert and extrovert, and I asked a question about introvert because I'm an introvert, but I know that some people listening to this are also extroverted, so I really don't want to leave them out. So earlier you mentioned how extroverts, they'll be better at keeping the conversation going on the spot, but they won't be as good at initiating the follow-up and nurturing the relationship. So how can extroverts get better at nurturing relationships once the networking event is over?
Sure. And great question. So, well, just like with the introvert, you also have to start with what's the larger goal here. So, you know, make sure that you're clear on whether you're an extrovert, you're clear on what's my larger goal. Is it a career-based goal? Is it a business-based goal? Is the business that I have right now, is it aligned with what I want to do, or do I want to make changes? So everything flows from there. You have to get really clear on that. And then secondly, you take from there, it's true, extroverts tend to be better in a room, in a networking event, that kind of environment. But then after that, they tend to fail when it comes to following up with people. And so I'm a big fan of using tools, because tools make our lives easier. And there's software out there, it's called customer relationship management software, CRM software. You've probably heard of Salesforce or Contactually or Insightly, you know, those types of tools. And that is software that people pay for. And it helps you to manage this web of relationships that we have. Because these days, we communicate with people across so many different platforms: email, text messaging, Facebook Messenger, you know, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. We've got all these different tentacles out there and different ways of communicating with people. And we don't have one cohesive place which is designed with intent as a tool for managing all those relationships. And frankly, you know, it's going to cost you a little money to invest in some software like this. We're talking like $500-$600 a year, probably, unless you buy some top of the line software, which you don't need to. $500-$600 a year, it is a drop in the bucket. If you can't get that, if you can't extract that amount of value out of your network, then it's, you know, you probably shouldn't be in business. So it's really a smart investment. And then it allows you to categorize all the different people in your life. You know, maybe you meet a group of, you know, 30 people here, you meet 40 people here, you meet 100 people there. And how do you keep track of all these different relationships and what cities they live in and what, you know, where you met them or what they're interested in? And so using a tool like this allows you to do that. The other thing it'll do, a way it can help both introverts and extroverts, is it allows you to prioritize those relationships across different industries or different cities and just categorize them by priority. So I don't recommend that you know, some people will say like, well, you know, should I keep track of everyone in my network based on, you know, what their profession is or what city they live in? That could be relevant depending on what field you're in. But what I think is most important is just in terms of priority. And that could mean it's someone who is, that has referred a lot of business to you already, or you just feel like ethically you're really aligned with them, you really resonate with the work that they do, but you want to prioritize them. And then you could, using a tool like Contactually, you can put them into different categories and it will remind you to follow up with them on a regular basis. So let's say you take the top 10 people. These are the most important people in your business, for your business, for your profession. And you want to make sure that you don't lose touch with these people. So you give yourself a reminder every 2 weeks, like I need to retweet something of theirs, or I need to just send them a message on Facebook, or I need to send them an article that I read about them at least every 2 weeks. And what it'll do, this is what's really creative and really cool, is if you've just exchanged messages with them after 13 days and that 14-day window is about to expire, it will reset the clock and it won't remind you about that person. It'll give you another 2 weeks because you want that 2-week window, you know, at a bare minimum that you're communicating with that person. And so, and this can be really helpful when it comes to people who, you know, you might only communicate every 3 months or every 6 months or something like that. You know, you want to make sure that you don't let those relationships go dormant, because that's what I've found through my career is, you know, there have been times that, I mean, I remember when I was full-time practicing law, I was looking at all my past referrals and there was a realtor who'd referred a bunch of clients to me over a period of 2 or 3 months. And I look back and I realized she hadn't referred anything to me in like almost a year. And I look back at my email and I realized I hadn't communicated with her in about a year at all. So what do? I reach back out. I say, hey, it's been so long. How you been? Let's reconnect. Let's get coffee or lunch. So we end up going to lunch. And what do you know, like a week or so after that, she ends up referring some business to me, you know? And so that's dollars in the door. That's money in the door. That's a relationship turned into opportunity for your business. People let these opportunities go dormant because they forget, because we all get busy with the craziness of daily life and we forget to do these things. So using a tool like a CRM, like Contactually, will allow you to manage all those different relationships.
I've always heard of CRM, but hearing you describe it makes me want to invest in it now, because we do have all these different relationships that we have to manage. And like, I mean, for people who, like, they may not see a retweet or something like that as impactful. Like, I have over 400,000 Twitter followers, and I notice the people who are consistently sharing my content. Like, I notice the people who are sharing my content every week, every 2 weeks, and I'm sure that goes for everyone all across the board. So all those little actions like that, they really do matter for strengthening the relationship with anyone in your niche.
Yeah, and you know, you can keep track of those people over time, and you're not going to be able to, you know, for you or anyone else, you're not going to be able to like categorize everyone immediately. It takes more time and diligence and patience and being consistent about it. But, you know, for me, and you also want to take an 80-20 approach, you know, so you can't categorize all 400,000 Twitter followers, you know, that would be impossible, but you focus on the 20% that are going to yield the biggest results. And so you say, okay, you know, like when you do a phone call or you meet with someone who's higher priority for your business, you know, you're like, where do you capture that information? You know, I mean, I know before I had Contactually, maybe I'd put it in my phone or something like that. You're not sure, or you try and keep it all in your head. But what I do now is I go into Contactually and I'll make a few notes. I'll tag them. They use tags in order to identify different people. So I might put the name of the city that they live in, or I might tag them with something that they're interested in. And then in the future, when something comes up, like I'll be able to look them up very easily. Like, for example, last month I did a dinner with a friend in San Francisco, just a group, dinner with other entrepreneurs. And I was able to look up incontextually in seconds, just cross search by San Francisco and entrepreneur. And I came up with a list of hundreds of entrepreneurs to invite to this dinner. And I narrowed it down, sent out a bunch of emails, and boom, we had, you know, 15 or 20 people. And this was right before Christmas. It was like right at the end of December, which is when it's very difficult to get a group of people to come out. So, and that's just one example. That's just putting together a dinner. But imagine you're launching a product, or imagine you're selling something or whatever. You know, there are times when you want to reach out to your network, and that is a great tool for using it.
And that is a really great way to nurture relationships. I'm literally like, all these ideas are flowing through right now. So, I mean, we definitely need to be nurturing our relationships. That's definitely the best way to do it. Is there like any other really good way, or just CRM?
You know, I've heard of other people using different techniques. I don't think that there is anything else out there that's built in an intentional way to manage your relationships. That's what CRM software does. There's other software out there that tries to be all in one solution, or that's more really focused on managing social media. And that's fine. There's, you know, social media tools out there, but I'm just a huge advocate for a CRM software, and it doesn't matter which one you use, but use one of them because your relationships are so critical. And you know, look for those opportunities where you can deliver value to people. You know, and then, you know, there are times that things come up. Like, for example, I hear about a job or something. You know, someone's hiring for a marketing director or something, and then I'd go into Connectually, I fire it up, I look at, you know, I'm able to run a search really quickly and send out an email to like 30 different people. And by the way, they look like individualized, personalized one-on-one emails to each person. They don't look like a big spam BCC email that's sent to a bunch of people. It looks like an individualized, personalized individual email to each person with a short message saying, hey, I heard about this job. I thought it might be a good fit for you. Don't know if you're, you know, in the market, but if so, hit me back, let me know. You know, so you're delivering value to people, and you're also, you know, keeping touch with your network.
I absolutely love this concept, and I will just let Breakthrough through Success listeners have some time to digest that. I don't want to like go too deep into it, but I mean, it's just so amazing how you're able to build these relationships with CRM. It's something that I'll definitely explore. But one of the things that I also enjoy exploring is unlocking potential. It's one of the taglines that I use in a lot of my videos. But what do you believe holds most people back from reaching their full potential?
Honestly, I think, you know, I'm sure you get this a lot through all your large Twitter following. I get this a lot through emails that I receive from people. And so often it's in our head, you know, it's in our head which is what is holding us back. It's the belief maybe that we don't deserve something, or it's a limiting belief that if we connect with a particular influencer or VIP, that person's not going to be quote unquote interested in us, or that they're going to be too high level. And so they're going to be, or worse yet, that we're going to be stalking that person. You hear people say that, you're like, oh, I don't want to send 3 emails over 3-month period to, you know, some CEO founder of a company because I don't want them to think, quote unquote, I'm stalking them. When the fact is, that's what you need to do sometimes in order to just break through, in order to, it's actually helpful sometimes for that person to be reminded, oh, they need to email you back. So I think as far as unlocking potential is being okay with ourselves and accepting ourselves and being willing to fail a little bit. You know, you're not always going to get an email back. You're not always going to become best friends with some keynote speaker at a conference. You come up, you rush up and you say, I love your book, I love your stuff. And they just got off stage and they're a little busy and harried. Maybe they don't give you enough of the time of day that you were hoping for. You know what? If you're not failing, you're not moving forward. So you need to be trying to do these things And no matter what level you're at, I don't care if you're just starting in your career, if you're 20, 21 years old. I mean, I was 22 years old. I was walking, at 22 years old, was walking around at the White House when I first interned there. And I was way below everyone else around there. But I managed to leverage that internship into a job working at the White House as a writer at 23 years old, even though I went to a party school, because I put relationships first, because I made that a priority in my life, and I made building relationships with other people number one, even though many of these people were, frankly, some of the most powerful people in the country, right? So that would be my advice to you, is it's often in your head. Be willing to allow yourself to succeed, and be willing, you know, to think about others first and how you can help them. When you turn that around, when you turn it all around, you start thinking about how can I help other people, and be thinking less about what can I get from this relationship? How can I get as much value as possible? I find it humbling, because you're not, the pressure is a little bit off. Like, you know, all the bar is, how can I deliver value to this person? The bar is not, what can I possibly get? How can I turn this into money as soon as possible? So that's what I would recommend, is turning it around psychologically, thinking about how can I deliver value to other people, and focusing on that first.
John, thank you for sharing those great insights. And I do feel like we just have to learn to accept ourselves and realize that failure is part of the process. We shouldn't get held down by one failure, but instead realize that with each failure, we do get closer to our successes, and challenges are just going to be part of the journey. Like challenges and failures, they're pretty close to one another, but some challenges we eventually do hit that breakthrough. But what is one big challenge that you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge?
Oh man. Well, I call it my personal .com failure, and it was a while ago now, but in the early 2000s, I was working for an up and coming governor of California, and for a variety of different reasons, economic downturn, some electrical energy problems California had, a California energy crisis. Arnold Schwarzenegger, who at that time was just a movie star, came along, and through the California recall, my boss was out of a job, and I was out of a job fairly quickly. And that was really humbling and really hard to go through. But, you know, I licked my wounds, and just like what I espouse today, you know, I turned to my relationships, and it was a relationship with someone who already trusted me, who managed to get me into a job. And it was at a time when, you know, California state government, California is the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world. So the government of California is huge. You know, it's not as big, obviously, as the federal government, but it is, if it were its own country, California, from an economic standpoint, would be fifth or sixth largest. And so it's huge. And so I had hundreds of friends who were out of work looking for jobs, and I managed to walk out of losing my job and right into another job because of those relationships. So, you know, that was a big setback and a failure for me. I'd had many friends who went to go work in the dot-com era in San Francisco, and so I considered it kind of like my own personal dot-com failure. But you know what? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And, you know, I survived it. It wasn't the end of the world. It led me to, make decisions in my career and make sure that I was being careful and looking out for myself, and that I knew that something completely unexpected can come along, you know, like just completely unexpected. No matter how secure you feel or confident you feel, you know, your business could go under, the company you're working for could suddenly do a big round of layoffs, and you're out. And when that happens, who are you going to turn to? What are the relationships you're going to turn to? Those are absolutely critical. You know, I mean, you know, Mark, you've probably gotten one of these emails from someone where like you get an email, you haven't heard from them in months or years, and all of a sudden they email you and it's like, hey, Mark, how you doing? So great to, you know, to talk to you. Haven't talked in a while. By the way, I just lost my job. Do you know about any, you know, job opportunities? And, you know, when I get something like that, fortunately, our economy has been doing pretty well the last couple of years, but you know, when I get something like that, I feel bad, but I also feel a little bit embittered. It's kind of like, well, where you been? Now you want something from me, but I haven't heard from you in forever. And now you like, you're just using me. You just want me to like, you know, find you a job. It doesn't exactly motivate me to do anything for you. So I just try and think about that. Like if you had worst case scenario, your company goes under, your business goes under, you lose everything. What you don't lose is your relationships, and the people that you've built strong relationships with, those will, they're going to have your back. So you need to have their back.
And you hit like spot on one of the problems with influencer marketing. When you get someone who it's very obvious, they're just trying to use you. Like, I feel like when people think about contacting influencers, they think, oh man, if this person tweets me, or oh, if this person gives me that connection, because I don't feel like people sometimes do that. So like you want to definitely take the time to nurture the relationship so that you genuinely care and taking an active interest in the person's brand. But I'd like to go back to one of the things that you mentioned during your big challenge, is that you were humbled by the process. And I don't feel like that's a word that a lot of people would use. Like, some people would be very frustrated during a challenge. Like, they got to like reclaw their way back to a certain level, or the just, I mean, humbled is an interesting word. So, can you share with us like why it was humbling, like why you felt humbled overall?
Yeah. I mean, I guess just at that time, at that age, you know, it was a reminder of that, you know, we're all kind of passing through here, and you don't, as particularly in government, when you're working in government, you don't own it. You know, as powerful as you think you may be, you're just there temporarily, as long as the people have trust in you to govern them. And so I say it's humbling because, you know, it's very easy to think when you're in a position of power, that you've got it made, you know, that you've put in all this effort and now you're going to get yours. And people who have that kind of attitude, they tend to get displaced, or they tend to even have kind of corrupting influence sometimes. So, you know, it reminded me, that experience reminded me to not take things for granted, to remember that you can lose the advantage that you think that you have, and to make sure that you are doing the things that you need to do to, you know, build assets that are going to benefit you for the long term. And this even extends, frankly, to what I've done in recent years in building a platform online and building a business that is more scalable. You know, for example, you know, I used to have a business that was totally local, totally based on local referrals and the legal profession. I was a lawyer. Well, you know, the legal profession has been changing dramatically, and things like AI are coming in and they're actually changing a lot of legal profession. So a lot of legal jobs are changing, or they're going overseas. That's not something that I want to depend on with my business. So I knew that had to change. And then also in terms of, you know, building a platform, you know, with social media, you know, the terms can change, like the rules of the game can change. I remember reading an article a while back about a guy. So you're a Twitter guy, so you know, Twitter owned Vine, and Vine was this kind of little media video platform. And this guy had 2.7 million followers on Vine. And then Twitter decided one day, without any notice, just shut down Vine. Yeah. The guy's business just like evaporated overnight. Well, you never want to be that vulnerable in any way. It'd be totally over leveraged in any possible way. So, you know, whether it's with relationships, or whether it's with my business, or whether it's with, you know, having worked in government before, I want to make sure that I'm not over leveraged and over dependent, and that the assets that I have are ones that I truly control, that no one can take away from me, and that I will be able to continue to take with me throughout my career and throughout my profession.
And it is interesting, again, I mean, the word humble and humbling that, like, that whole experience when people would normally think of it as a big challenge. And I feel like we should use this as an example. We should just realize that it's a humbling process to go through any challenge, any struggle, and that's going to help us achieve a higher level of success. And another thing that could help us achieve a higher level of success is reading a lot of great books. I mean, John, I know you mentioned Dan Pink earlier in the show, and I'm wondering if you could share with us three books that you believe would have a great impact on us.
Oh man, three books. Okay, so I've been not reading as many books this year as I would like. The one big one that I do want to mention, though, that I have read a lot of, or that I've recommended over and over again, like on dozens of different podcasts that I've been on, is called Give and Take by Adam Grant. It's about the different types of people that are out there. We have givers, we have takers, people, that is, people who are more likely to help other people versus people who are more likely to try and, you know, help themselves first. And so I found that the, you know, I originally went through my career thinking kind of intuitively, like when you give to other people, that's going to help you get success. But I didn't really have the social science back, you know, any evidence to back it up. And this book is a really great book. And it actually gives you kind of that backup, explaining, you know, what the ways in which that people who are givers are more likely to rise to the top of the success ladder. So that's a big one. Another one that I read a while back was 80-20 Sales and Marketing by Perry Marshall. And that one really got me to just kind of really deeply focus on the 20% that leads to the best results for your business. And I don't know if people have focused on that. 80-20 by Richard Koch, I think, is the original author of that, also known as the Pareto Principle. And that book is really like, really kind of like goes into the analysis of how, like, throughout a lot of different industries, this principle of like 20% of effort, energy, time, attention yields the more like 80% of results. And it just like occurs in a lot of different fields. It's kind of mind boggling the way that actually works. And then the other one I'll just say is it's very popular right now to be a fan of Elon Musk, the entrepreneur, the founder of SpaceX and Tesla. And I met him before he was already famous for those who knew PayPal and some of his other accomplishments. But I met him at a time when Tesla was on the brink of failure. Wow. I'd known about Tesla since the late 2000s. I was interested in electric vehicles, and there were a lot of startups in Silicon Valley, which is near where I live, a lot of startups that were competing to create new electric vehicle, and Tesla was one of them. And something about it just made me feel that it was going to be the one that was going to be most successful. I didn't think they'd all fail, which actually ended up largely being true. Most of them did fail. But I met Elon Musk in, I think it was either 2009 or 2010, right around the time that that in retrospect, Tesla was almost running out of cash. I met him when they unveiled the prototype for the Tesla Model S. And they revealed this design because then they got a bunch of deposits for the new vehicle 2 years before it was created. And they were able to use that to kind of keep the business afloat, which I'm glad that it did, because it's an amazing company. And now what he's done with SpaceX is pretty phenomenal as well. So the book, Elon Musk by Ashley Vance, which came out a couple of years ago now in 2015, it goes into really the background of the man. he's not a great guy to work for. He's can be a bit of a tough boss, but you can't argue with his accomplishments. And I love that he his focus is on a larger mission. With Tesla, their mission is to accelerate the transition to sustainable transportation. And with SpaceX, their mission, their larger mission, is to make humans an interplanetary species by populating Mars and then beyond. And I think that having an amazing big vision like that allows people to flock to you, even if you they know that you're going to drive them and you're going to demand more of them than they think is even possible. So those are three books that I would recommend.
John, thank you for those three great book recommendations. Breakthrough Success listeners, you can find those books and the show notes at markgubernie.com/E110. And before we get to the end of this episode, I'd love to flip the tables a little bit. So, John, I've been asking you a lot of questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we should be asking ourselves more often?
I guess I'll go back to something I've mentioned a couple of times in this interview, which is, go back and question what your larger goals are. As we record this, it's the beginning of 2018. And so I just went through the process of setting my goals for 2018. I'm a big believer in writing down written goals, not just annually, but quarterly, and then breaking down even further down to, goals for each day and each week. And so I'm a huge fan of doing that. But I would think, I would ask you to like really think that through, because so many people, they pursue one avenue, a career or a profession or a business or something, and then they achieve it and they're like, that's it. They realize that it wasn't really what they needed or what they really wanted. So I would just encourage everyone who's listening to take the time to really do that from time to time. Go back and reevaluate your goals and see if your life hasn't changed or if your priorities haven't changed. And if you were to realize what you're seeking to achieve, would that actually be what you really want?
John, thank you for providing us with that really great question. And I do feel like we should definitely be thinking about our goals and why we're actually achieving them and what exactly they mean to us. And thank you for providing all of your great insights throughout this episode. And for all the listeners wondering, you can find John at smartbusinessrevolution.com. And you can also find them at rise25.com, where you can learn how to move away from one-to-one client work, where you normally trade hours for dollars, to a one-to-many offering, so you don't have to be locked in to your business. John, it was such a pleasure to have you on the Breakthrough Success Podcast. I mean, it's amazing all the insights you shared. Just thank you for taking the time to share with us.
Awesome, Mark. My pleasure.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgubernie.com/retweet.